Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Hitler, then to Horvat in the slip. He scores! Bo Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slip. Pedersen scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Scott Rintoul and Mick Nizar.
Our elected officials get a first-hand view of Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson tonight. That's what it's all about, isn't it? You think Trudeau's leading a contingent out there in the snowstorm to Canada?
Oh, yeah, right. They've got to brave
the elements.
Yeah, that's tough.
It is tough.
It's worth it.
I think it's worth it.
Should be.
On most nights for Senators fans, it has not been worth it. Even though this team plays hard and even though they've got some nice young pieces, the location of the arena makes it very difficult. I have no idea what kind of draw the Vancouver Canucks are. I do know that when inclement weather like they've had the last couple of days rolls in, very few things are worth making that trip for. Very few when this kind of weather exists. Yeah, you know what? I'll just stay home. I'll watch this one. I'll listen to it on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. That's what I'll do.
But
they may see a show tonight.
It's Elias Pettersson. It's Quinn Hughes.
His only visit to this arena was quite memorable last year. That hat trick he had last year against the Ottawa Senators, one to behold.
And so why not a repeat performance? And look, I'm curious too, as the season progresses, or actually as this team progresses for a few years to come, how much of a draw they become outside of Vancouver. Because at their peak, their away attendance, you know, peak Sedin era was really strong. Now, part of that was Canucks Nation extends quite, you know, has quite a reach. But when a big draw team, an exciting team, comes to Vancouver, you know, people want to go watch those games. I'm curious how it extends when peak Hughes and peak Pettersson start hitting that stage of their career, how much people want to go see these guys.
So this is a difficult question for people in this market, which is most of our listeners, to answer. But if we have people from out of town and you happen to be in another NHL market, but you're a Canucks fan, you hit us up right now. Subway text line 650-650. What was a bigger draw? Peak Canucks, top of the league, 2010-2011, or West Coast Express? And I mean that sincerely, because that was seen as the best line in hockey. And Todd Bertuzzi has talked about this before. They felt like they were a traveling band to a certain degree. They would roll into towns, and sometimes they wouldn't land until 2 in the morning. And he said, there'd be 40 or 50 people outside our hotel wanting to get autographs because everybody wanted to see the West Coast Express.
That's fair. I didn't mean to admonish that.
No, not at all.
But now that I think of that line, yeah, they were probably more the rock band, but the totality of the team in that 2009-2012 stretch would have been, you know, quite the draw too. But yeah, the name value of West Coast Express has a ton of pull across the NHL during that stretch. But you know, look, I've got friends and family overseas that tune in every once in a while. They're coming in May, and they're like, well, we really hope they're in the playoffs. We'd love to go talk and see this Pettersson and Hughes you keep talking about from across the pond that are hoping to see this. I think soon enough, they will be a draw across the league, massive draw across the league.
Man, would that be something if they were playing hockey in May?
Yeah. Again, I've got overseas family really hoping that there's a prolonged run because the buzz here would be awesome.
Yep, that's deep in the second round to be playing in May. It's possible. Mm-hmm. It's certainly possible. Last night, Vegas takes care of Edmonton.
Especially if you get Edmonton.
Well, or
Calgary
or Arizona, whatever it happens to be. It's not that it's a gimme by any stretch of the imagination, but we made this point yesterday. I made it on my show again today. Every single person in that situation feels good about his team's or her team's chances. Edmonton versus Vancouver, Calgary versus Vancouver, Arizona versus Vancouver, both sides, both cities, both markets in any of those cases says, yeah, we can do this. That's not going to be easy. They've got Pettersson and Hughes, and those guys have McDavid and Dreisaitl, for example. But yeah, I think by and large, our team will be better.
Every city would lean on their positives.
Yes.
Right? Every city would say, hey, we have McDavid. We feel great. Calgary would say, hey, our star players started picking it up. We've probably got the best depth of talent.
And it's funny because Calgary might be the only market that would be a little down on its team. And I say that because they witnessed what happened in the playoffs last year. Mm-hmm. And so they have some evidence, whereas Edmonton doesn't have any. Vancouver doesn't have any. Arizona certainly doesn't have any. They have individual players who've been to the playoffs before, but their team in recent memory, not so much. And as you mentioned, when you get back there the first time, it's something to behold. Mm-hmm. It really is, because the expectation in most cases is very low. It's about playoff experience. So it's playing playoff hockey. It feels like gravy, and you should love it because it goes away like that. It's gone. Like, bye-bye. Remember the Leafs? Remember when the Leafs got there against the Washington Capitals?
Yeah.
They lost in six games, but the Leafs put up a good fight, and they won a couple of games, and it was hailed as a complete success, which it was.
And the hope that comes with it. Look, that wasn't that long ago. Look where they are now. They're dreading that first-round playoff matchup. Dreading. The management group felt, you know, maybe next year is the time. They're likely going to the playoffs, but ask any Leafs fan right now. Are they excited for the first round? No. And this is that black hole. That's that losing culture you can't let seep into it. That this is why it's important for this team now to make a step. You can't keep growing for tomorrow.
Canucks 14 points up on last year's season to date as they roll into Ottawa. We've talked about them being about 10 points better, 12 points better. They're 14 right now. That looks pretty good on Vancouver as it rolls into Ottawa. This text comes in from Scott in North End. Says, my dad lives in the Ottawa Valley. We went to a Canucks-Sens game a few years ago. I was grabbing a wobbly pop in the third period as it started. Heard a huge cheer. Went back to my seat to find out the Canucks had scored a goal. That should say it all.
Yeah, they're you know, we talk about this market. How, okay, there's going to be bandwagon fans in this market, right?
Were you surprised how many Bruins fans there were the other night?
Stunned.
I was very surprised.
Stunned.
And it's not that it's not that they don't have a good following.
Yeah. No.
I was just surprised at how many Bruins fans were in that arena last weekend.
We're the first ones in the rink, obviously, right? And when you start seeing fans filter in, the early fans were probably about 90% Bruins fans. It was stunning. And overall, probably 60-40. It was probably 60-40. There was a lot of yellow and black peppered throughout the entire arena that game.
Probably made it a lot better for Canucks fans seeing the blitz.
Yes.
Seeing 9-3 go up on the board because they had somebody to point to and say, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Tonight.
Now, you know, that's a quick comeback, but still.
Of course it is.
Yes.
You know how that one ends.
But, okay, we talk about how the resurgence of the fan base here in this market. Think about outside of this market, right? If you're not in it day to day, yes, you're trying hard to keep in touch at times, but if your fandom waned outside of this market, now it's probably back, and you're probably going to see more traveling fans or outside of the market fans be at Canucks games, the similar way we saw in years past.
Vancouver, Ottawa. There's not a must-win component to this tonight, but it's a should-win. It's a you better get it. We saw this against Anaheim. That's mm-hmm. how it felt. Anaheim, quite frankly, is a stronger squad than what Ottawa is going to roll out there tonight. We all think they've got nice young pieces, and we all think 2 years down the road, it might look something like it does here in Vancouver this year. It's fair to say, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think as far as prospect pools, I know LA gets labeled as the gold standard. But, you know, Ottawa, that's a lot of interesting pieces. Josh Norris, obviously, playing tonight. They've got Colin White. They've got Brady Tkachuk, obviously. Thomas Chabot. Like, they have actually some, like, a real skeleton, right? Like, they have Tkachuk. They've got the pillars of Tkachuk and Chabot. They probably need a long-term goalie, but they've got some long-term interesting pieces, plus two picks really high this year. Like, what if they get two top four picks? Then that's you can really accelerate what this rebuild looks like. And you wouldn't expect this to go on much longer. Like, by year three, year four of this rebuild, you expect them to be back in the playoffs.
Well, DJ Smith sort of talked about what he saw in Toronto and how fast that turned around as an assistant there when the Leafs were rebuilding. And now he's obviously hoping that happens with his centers. And I do think there's some parallels to draw between what he's going through right now, what Travis Green went through a couple of years ago, that transfer of leadership, moving on to the new nucleus. And as we've talked about many times, trying to figure out who can play. Not who can play in the league, who can play on a winning team, who can play for a team that's actually going to do something. Travis Green has always come back to that. We never hear about it now because this is a team that wins. And they have made some decisions on players over the last couple of years that some fans agree with, some fans don't. But they've made decisions on guys they want to ride with right now.
Yeah, they've done it for the greater good, right? And what's strange about that, too, is I feel like the contingent that wanted to consistently see the players we're talking about, the Berchis, the Goldobins in high-level spots, also wanted the team to do poorly so they could draft better players and have a better draft standing to get that high-end talent. Well, those things kind of work in contrast. If you thought those guys were great players and you want them in high-level spots and they're not performing, like it seems like a cycle. So the last 2 years was getting ready for this moment. Travis Green has been very consistent about this is the way we play. We're not going to break this. This is our mentality. And, okay, we're going to do minor tweaks here with the talent we have, but there's a standard we expect from you to when it's go time, you can live up to it. And certain players have fallen by the wayside. A player like Jake Virtanen, I would say, has come through it much better. Now, there's still progress to be made, but like that's a guy who survived what Travis Green was talking about. The other guys in the AHL, not so much.
And that's fair. And, hey, we have to put our hands up. We thought Sven Berchi should have been one of the players at the start of the year that they kept around. I thought this was going to be a nice year for Sven Berchi. It's proven to be not so much, and the falling out of that contract, Canucks can deal with the consequences of that, but they've made their decisions, some of them being the tough ones that they've talked about over the last couple of years. Just to give you some context, of the 18 skaters expected to dress for Ottawa tonight, 12 of them have one goal or less in the NHL this year. Like, they're not rolling out murderer's row.
Some of this is... You might be doing a lot of Googling tonight.
They've got some nice young players.
Yeah.
Brady Tkachuk, yeah, you better pay attention to him out there. He's got a nose for the net, knows where to go, and he's got the Tkachuk DNA. He's going to show up and play this game. Thomas Chabot, it's been a down year offensively compared to what he did last season, but Thomas Chabot can sting you on any night. Look, we can go through some of the names. The bottom line is this. Go take care of these 2 points. We always talk about games in hand. Well, the Canucks, this is a game in hand. Like, this is a game where you need to prove that those are worth something. Saturday against Toronto, hey, there's a coin flip game. It's not that the Canucks can't win it, but you don't go in there saying, they'll beat the Leafs. They're expected to beat the Leafs. No, you hope they beat the Leafs if you're a Canucks fan on Saturday. That's not your expectation. Tonight, that should be and will be the expectation of Canuck Nation.
Just think of, okay, where this team was a year ago at this time, as far as in relation to, okay, like, who are some of the guys the Ottawa Senators are rolling out? Think of, okay, we know in this market the players backwards and forwards. But if they rolled into another market and an Ottawa Senators fan was like, hey, I wonder who's on Vancouver. Who's Ashton Sautner? Who's Brendan Leipzig?
Oh, Derek Pouliot's still playing.
What's going on here? Right? It's like Marcus Granlund's really playing top 6 minutes? That's the inverse is happening here, right? At some point tonight, you're going to be watching the game, listening to the game, thinking, Michael Bodker's still around? And Nick Paul? Well, what's going on here? And, like, nothing against those players, but that's their version of Marcus Granlund. And all those legendary cult players now here in Canucks fandom.
Is there a specific player or a specific line you have expectations for tonight for the Vancouver Canucks?
Yeah, I know this is something we're going to talk about on Reach Deep as well. I'm filling in for Dan Riccio, but like to me, this is a depth game. Like, this comes down to Bo Horvat, second line, and beyond. It comes down to that line, Gaudette. If you ask me to pick one in particular, I guess the Gaudette line. Like, this should be a stat padding game to some degree. Not 9 goals or something like that, but everybody should be able to fill in not just goals and assists, but like your underlying numbers. You should be able to step out into this game and be on the front foot this entire game because the depth just isn't there. Like, Chris Tierney's on their first line. I like Chris Tierney. He's not a first-line player. That's tough. And so they should be able to, on any given night, maybe Tierney in that line and their best five can match the Canucks' best five on their worst night, but the totality of this team, the depth should be able to win out.
Given the way they started that game against Montreal the other night, I would expect them to come out of the gates early. However, this does fall into the category of that Kings game we saw earlier this year. Remember that game where the Canucks just beat them on the power play? Vancouver wasn't great that night, but their power play was, and their talent, high end, is just better than what the Kings can roll out right now.
Was that the 5-3 game, something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it has a feel like that, that even if you're not at your best tonight, you still have so many different ways you should be able to beat the Ottawa Senators that there's no excuse to lean on where you don't come out with 2 points. There's no, well, yeah, this happened, but, or a goalie got hot. No, there's none of that. Like, they have multiple ways to beat this Senators team, and they better exercise one of them.
Yeah, because there were games, that LA game's a great example, the Nashville one also. Like, that's November and October. You can get by at that stage of the year of, hey, we were successful at this facet of the game. That led us to victory. We really only played 28 minutes, but we got out with 2 points. That's fine. This is February. This is March. This is fine-tuning, right? And I don't have an issue with it when it's November. I have an issue when it's the final 20 games. This is about you got to start playing complete 60 games no matter who it is. And the one thing I don't want to see is, hey, a 4-2 win and we got 4 power play goals, but we coasted the rest of the way. You can't do that. This is about a bigger mentality.
Well, and I'll say this about the Senators. They play hard.
Yes.
Like, they don't take nights off. They might not be good enough.
Very similar to, like, what Travis Green has done here the last 2 years.
Absolutely. Like, they were a hardworking team from the get-go with Travis Green. They just didn't have enough. Just didn't have enough to go. And so Senators fans go out right now, and they look for Brady Tkachuk. Or tonight, maybe Josh Norris. Okay, what might he be for our team? The same way Canucks fans 2 years ago went out and said, I hope Besser scores tonight. How do you think the Canucks do? I don't know, but I hope Besser scores.
Right.
That's kind of what it is for the Ottawa Senators. They know their lot in life. They're doing the lottery simulator that Canucks fans have been well accustomed to seeing at this time every single year. All right, can I make myself feel better today when I hit the lottery simulator? That's a lot of the texts we got. That's where Ottawa's at right now. And I like what they've done. And one of the things I like about what Ottawa's done this year, they've been quiet, Bic. We haven't heard a lot of noise around this organization. It was their biggest problem in the 18 months that preceded this season.
They might be losing, but that's the bigger issue. Like, or the bigger gain this year. They've been very quiet, which is so important for that franchise. Just make less noise, build this up correctly. And again, it's trending in the right direction. If we want to associate year one of DJ Smith to year one of Travis Green to some degree, what was 73 points year one for Travis?
75.
They're on pace for 70 right now. So it's a certain likeness. It's in that direction.
And that's probably what they would have been if it wasn't for Sedin Week in Travis Green's first year.
Right.
That's probably where they would have landed.
That's fair.
Sedin Week bumped up the point total a little bit. They would have been right around 70, 72 points. But they had the hot week at the end.
Yeah.
Got 5 points. It was all good.
So the expectation next year is they get an influx of some young talent. You know.
Can you be closer to 500?
Yeah. Can you be closer to 80? And then after that, maybe the current Canucks jump is too much, but now you start getting to yourself in that range of tier that we're talking about. For the Canucks this year, you know, you and I talked about it at the beginning of the year. It was, they're probably somewhere between the 21st and 14th best team, somewhere in that range. And now where are they? Or where you would expect them to go with growth, and that growth has happened? Somewhere between 12 and 8, somewhere in that range, and they're probably 12th right now, and that's sounds about right. Like, that's how you make in-season growth.
No question.
Whatever happens next year, then we start talking about getting to that next tier.
When we talk about expectations and how they change, and when you don't meet that incremental growth, it is difficult for a fan base to deal with. Buffalo is the perfect example of this. Buffalo is supposed to be this year where Vancouver is.
Yeah,
that's where they're supposed to be, and they're not. They're right in the same rut. They might take a little step back. I mean, they're actually on pace for more points this year than they had last season. They're on pace for 87, but you're supposed to be across the 90-point threshold. And if you miss this year in Buffalo, you're supposed to miss the way Montreal missed last year.
Right. Yes. And I've said this before. There's a lot of 88-point teams in the NHL. Like, just if you grade them, there's a ton of 88-point teams. The Vancouver Canucks were probably in that group. But over the course of a season, you're going to get hot goaltending. You're going to get bounces. You're going to go on shooting percentage streaks, all of that. So one of those teams is going to become a 96-point team, and one of them is going to become a 76-point team. But grade-wise, they're very similar. And right now, you would just go across and you could say, okay, the Canucks are probably on that higher end because they got great goaltending. A team like Minnesota, not so much. But they're similar in styles, just some have different arrows because one's at a different life cycle, and Minnesota's on the back end. But the talent gap in the NHL is pretty close. Certain teams like LA, Detroit, Ottawa stand out, obviously. But the meaty middle is really close.
The LA, we just beat the Penguins Kings?
Yeah.
But that's an example yeah. last night of what can happen. You don't show up with your best stuff. You don't show up with even half your best stuff. You can get beaten by an LA Kings. You can get beaten by an Ottawa Senators. That is a very recent lesson. And the Penguins are in a little bit of a rut, certainly by their standards. This is the first time they've lost four in a row. This is the first time they've lost back-to-back games since late November. So they were due for a little bit of a letdown somewhere, and it's come at a time that has people concerned in Pittsburgh, but they got plenty of time to turn that around.
650, I want to touch on a couple of texts before we get to Colby Armstrong coming up later. This one from Griffin in Surrey. I'm kind of worried on how Patterson and Hughes will handle in the playoffs. I know both have been in championships, but NHL playoffs are different. They might be gripping their sticks a little too hard. Do not concern yourselves with that.
Nope.
Not that that won't happen, Griffin. This is part of the process. This is part of the learning process. You should be excited that they're going to learn those lessons, because that's the value of going to these playoffs this year. That's why this is so important, to start getting those lessons. If you start waiting too long and you only give Elias Pettersson 8 shots at going to the playoffs instead of 11, well, he's learning those lessons too late, and now you've shrunken that window. This gives you as many opportunities and accelerates learning all those things you're worried about. I'm not saying that's going to happen, and I'm not trying to refute your worries. It's just, it's part of it, and you've got to embrace it.
Well, you've skipped a step. That's what I would say to Griffin in Surrey.
Yeah.
You've skipped a step. There are 4 phases here that we're talking about. Travis Green breaks the season into 3 phases, and the playoffs are the 4th. We're entering stage 3. Phase 3 happens right now, and we have never seen Elias Pettersson in stage 3. We've never seen Quinn Hughes in stage 3. This is going to be part of that as well. And based on what happens in stage 3, which is the next 20 games, Griffin, you're going to have evidence one way or another to base your playoff prediction on. And say, you know what? During the stretch drive, when the hockey got harder and time and space went away and it became a little more physical and teams were really ramped up, here's what Pettersson did. Here's what Hughes did. Here's what Horvat did. Based on that, here's what I think is going to happen in the playoffs. But let's at least see phase 3. Yeah. Before we start guessing as to what's going to happen in phase 4.
And my concern when reading a text like that is, this is where, like, need and blame kind of match, where people are now raising their expectations, right? The expectations of the season, this is why I've been very consistent on it. Trades be damned, and not, like, you got to be consistent with your expectations from where you set them in August and September. What's the goal? The goal is make the playoffs. So everything gets judged against that. If you're now raising your expectations and you're worried about, hey, how are they going to do in the playoffs? I really want 3 rounds. Remember where you were in September, because everything has to get judged versus that. And if you constantly change your expectations, well, you constantly have to change your course of action as a GM. And they can't do that. As an organization, you can't constantly adjust, because you're going to make knee-jerk reactions all the time.
You may change your view of what you believe a team is capable of.
Yes, but again, you and I have talked about this. Mm-hmm. If they're up 3-1 in a series, they lose in round 1, how does that get framed on the success of the season? Like, to me, it's like making the playoffs is this year's standard. Whatever happens, that is free money. You're on a free roll.
I generally agree with that, though I do believe that there is this special category where things go a specific manner.
Right. If they get swept and they lose 4-0 every game.
Well, and again, it depends how.
Yeah.
It always depends how. You lose in overtime every game, get swept by a team that goes on. Okay.
But again, that worry is also why people will get mad and angry. There's a need and they want to point blame. They need to see results. Well, results this year is making the playoffs.
You're up 3 goals with 10 minutes to go in game 7, and I might look at you a little differently. But that's never happened, has it? Oh, wait, it happened to the Leafs a couple
of years
ago.
It was 4-1, if I recall.
Yeah, it was 4-1. Yeah, I remember that game. I do. A lot of people smiling, thinking back on that memory.
Except for Leaf fan Steve, who's already concerned.
About the Canucks or about the Leafs?
About the Leafs, because we were talking about earlier, is any Leaf fan excited about round 1? Leaf fan Steve texting in, nope, dreading it.
Duncan says, we haven't made the playoffs yet. That's fair, Duncan, but it would take a collapse at this point.
Yeah.
And now we're talking about way bigger issues than just this team's performance down the stretch.
Again, just to give you a frame of reference here, for someone to jump them, let's say Arizona, to jump them. Arizona got 16 games left. For them to get to 90 points, they've got to go 10-6. 90 points. The Canucks, to get to 90 points, have got to go what? They've got 20 games left? 8-12. So it's like it's getting really tough for someone to jump them. So the Canucks can just be average, and Arizona's got to be exceptional to get in. That's the difference.
We'll try to be average. We'll see if he can be exceptional. Colby Armstrong joins us next right here on your home of Canucks Hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Some big games tonight. Some really big games tonight. Canucks Ottawa doesn't qualify, other than this is one the Canucks need to grab a couple of points as far as the race for what you and I are calling second place in the Pacific Division, because we think that's the sweet spot. Forget about worrying about first. Forget about going for first. I know the Canucks players aren't going to look like that, management.
No.
And there are some, hey, I already had a text in today, Bick, some people saying, no, go for first. I want Nashville in the first round. Canucks have dominated Nashville. Something tells me Nashville's going to look a little different in the playoffs than they did in those pred whoopins, we'll call them.
And you can't live this season. Can't live and die by the power play in the playoffs. Canucks crushed the Pens on the penalty kill or on the power play. So you can't live and die by that. But yeah, I do not want to play Ellis, Josi, Ekholm in the first round. Maybe down the road. I'm pro going against best competition, but to start it off, especially with this team, two is a nice spot. Two or three is a nice sweet spot.
We agreed yesterday that in the Vegas Oilers games, if you're a Canucks fan, you should probably be cheering for Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Probably. And that's what happened last night. That game was closer than 3-0 indicates. That was a game that Fleury was exceptional from the get-go. And if he's not exceptional, Edmonton's up early. Turns out they were down 1-0 after one. Leon Draisaitl hits a post that would have tied things up, and then shortly thereafter, it's 2-0, and Fleury was on his game, and just you could tell they weren't going to get one by him last night. But there were a couple of crossbars. There were a couple of posts. Edmonton was right there in that game. Ultimately, Vegas prevails. So tonight, Nashville hosting Calgary. Canucks fan, who should be cheering for?
Regulation win.
You don't think it matters? It's obviously Nashville, isn't it?
It's got to be Nashville, right? Yeah.
If you're a Canucks fan, you want this to be Nashville because there's a divisional element to this, let alone just a playoff position element to this.
Yeah, you'd want it to be Nashville.
Like, I'm not suggesting Canucks fans want Nashville in the playoffs, but you want less people contending for your divisional spots, which are 1-3.
Unless you would want it to be Calgary, and that solidifies our wild card one position. And it's tougher because Wild Card 2 will play
top of the Central.
Yeah.
Most likely, unless Vegas gets and keeps on a heater here.
True.
St. Louis, Dallas, they're not out of the woods yet as
far
as getting caught.
We're still too far away to be talking about seeding, I think.
We are.
We're like 10 games away.
But I was just talking on your cheer meter. Who should you be cheering for tonight if you're a Canucks fan?
Yeah, I think Nashville.
Nashville makes the most sense. There's a couple big games. The one in the East that's big is Leafs-Panthers. It's a big game.
Yeah.
That is a big game. Two teams that at the deadline we expected to do something much different than what they did. Panthers started things rolling, and I thought Panthers were going to go more along the lines of the team they traded with. I thought they would do something like Carolina. Okay, here's our early deal. It's a significant one, and now we're going to do a little bit more. Instead, they just stopped. No, Trocheck's out. We got these four other bodies in. Two of them are off the A. Two of them into our lineup. We're good.
I thought it would be more 3D moves. Like, okay, we're moving Trocheck out. We're bringing this guy in, and we can move this piece out. Hoffman, Pisick, whatever it was. I thought they'd be more active, and it was – that was our move, and we're standing by it.
Leafs, we thought they were setting up for 3D moves. Turns out they were setting up for no D moves, which is not great because they don't have any D to begin with right now. They just lose Jake Muzzin on Monday. They're still without Riley. They're still without CeCe. Not a lot of guys on the back end that were supposed to be there at this time of the year.
Is this essentially for that spot? Because if the Leafs go up 4 points, look, we're still 18 games out. But
and there's a game in hand for the Panthers.
Yeah, but if the Leafs go up 4 points, it's pretty massive. So Leafs lose this game, and it's going to be tough because the Panthers can absolutely hang with them offensively. The Panthers also have their own defensive struggles, but...
That's the thing with both of these teams. Yeah. And, hey, there have been nights... And
take the over is what we're saying.
That game against Pittsburgh was an example for Toronto. There have been nights where, hey, they look pretty sound structurally. Florida's had nights like that as well. For the most part, though, you get down one or two goals against either of these teams, and you say, all right, they're going to give us chances to get back into this. It's whether or not we capitalize on them.
And think of this from a Canucks perspective as well. This is one of the biggest games of the season for Toronto because of the playoff chase, right? You get Toronto next. Is there a letdown spot? Are they, all right, we went through that game, win or loss. All their focus is on this game. Can you take advantage of that? Is this a – is the Canucks game a look-ahead spot for Toronto?
Maybe, although I find it hard to believe as we welcome Colby Armstrong of Sportsnet to the proceedings that after what happened last Saturday in Toronto, there won't be a lot of focus on what happens this Saturday night in Toronto. How are you, Colby?
What's going on? That's a nice way to start it off, yeah.
That's a big game, man. What's the climate like back east for this game between the Leafs and the Panthers tonight?
Yeah, well, I did the last game against Tampa Bay for them, and I guess like a pretty good character win for them, really, and you know, like fighting all those demons, I think it helped being on the road. But the, you know, obviously the climate is pretty touch and go with the team right now after the trade deadline and last Saturday's David Ayers Carolina game. And I think it helped for them to get out. And, you know, there's lots of questions. 11-game home win streak on the line for Tampa Bay and starting to play some really good hockey and how they would face that going into that game. So all things considered, I think a pretty good win for them coming out of that weekend.
Don't think we've talked to you since the David Ayers thing. What was your take on the whole situation?
I really couldn't believe that it was happening. Like, you never know who's coming out of that tunnel when that situation arises. Like, there's not much talk day to day about the team's e-bug situation or what the setup is. So I was surprised by it. I think something will change with it going forward now. And I mean, I could see, I just remember the look on Rob Brindamore's face as he sees this guy coming on the ice, like, oh my goodness, as it's, you know, it's that time of the year when everything, you know, means so much. We know where Carolina's trying to battle their way in and, you know, such a big game between both teams and obviously worked out well. Carolina really stepped up and played unbelievable, but made for a heck of a story. I tell you what, Saturday night in Toronto against the Leafs, it makes it huge. So, I mean, Ayers is crazy right now. He's all over every TV show. He's done his whole America-Canadian tour, and I think he's still going.
Have you had any weird moments like that? Not you know, not necessarily e-bug, but what's the strangest thing you've had happen when you're touring the games and something just bizarre just happened?
Oh, my God. The lockout year, I went to the East Coast League. My brother was playing there at the time, so I was like, oh, I'll go join him. I didn't play in any of the games. I actually coached. But the East Coast League's like crazy. It's like the jungle, man. Like, they have their little tiny salary cap. And one of the goalies ended up getting hurt. So because of this, a bunch of guys had to go in the locker room. We had to, like, you know, change our contracts to take less so that we could sign, which was our video coach. He was like 300 pounds to play net, to back up. And I'm in the dressing room. No joke. He's laying on the ground on his stomach. And I'm strapping the goalie pads on his legs so he can go in net for warm-ups. It was absolutely unbelievable. He didn't get in the game, but I just found that to be unbelievable. You know, we had to go in and say, yeah, I'll take $100 off this guy, take $100 off that guy. Okay, he's got it. You've got enough money now under the cap to pay this guy for this game. And we fit him in and strapped him up into pads he never played before, and he sat on the bench. Video coach. Unbelievable.
When that story hits the silver screen, it needs to be tweaked for Hollywood purposes so that you guys are literally passing around a hat in the dressing room and guys are taking out money from their wallet to pay this guy with.
But we're so poor. Like, we're so poor we can barely get it together.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Like, you guys, honestly, I was just, the whole situation of the East Coast League is amazing. Like, those guys love hockey. They just love hockey, like, you know, four games in five nights or whatever it is. They're riding the bus and, you know, laying it all on the line. And for the salaries and the cap that those teams have is pretty incredible that those guys go for it and are playing to chase their dream.
Well, it's pretty funny. I heard Brent Cron tell this story on Calgary Radio earlier this week, and I'm not sure if this has gotten back to you, but he was the e-bug a few years ago in Calgary because nobody anticipated this situation, like 2014 happening no, there wasn't always a guy at the game. They called him at his house, and he was eating a pizza. He just finished like an entire pizza. He had to drive to the Saddle Dome, and he said that he's strapping on the pads, and he's getting his equipment on, and the guys come in the second intermission, and they see him just laying on the trainer's table trying to digest this wheel that he's just throwing down his throat, man.
Hey, at least you can rely on the fact, at least you can hang your hat on the fact that he's an ex-first-round pick.
Yes.
Like, I mean, at least there's something there to, like, his background of hockey where you think he could get in there and stop pucks. Like, we have J.S. Albana live here in Pittsburgh. We play, like, some pickup games or some beer league or some alumni games. And, like, he hasn't played in forever, but he gets in there. And, I mean, I'm telling you, he's, like, good. Like, he knows how to play. So it's a big difference, I think, if they were able to get guys like that. Here's what I think they should do. I think, like, the NHL should have, like, a e-bug division, and every team has their own e-bug. They hold tryouts, so every bum can come out and try out if they think that they're going to be good enough to be this guy. You have to meet the certain criterias, maybe pass a physical, whatever it may be. They're going to make a little bit of money on the side, and you're there for all 41 games. You can't practice with the team. You can still have, you know, your random guy that you want to come out and practice, but this guy's responsibility is to be the NHL e-bug in that city.
Yeah, and I like that suggestion. I'm glad we're exploring options. I wouldn't even have a problem if you were allowed to practice with the team from time to time. Listen, we've seen goaltending coaches. We've seen video coaches suit up.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have a problem if it's a small salary. I wouldn't even have a problem, Colby, if that player traveled and that was part of the perk. Look, we're not going to pay you like an NHL player. You're not part of the PA.
No.
But part of your deal is you're going to be on this team for the next couple of years. And I actually think that if you get the right people that are applying for this, maybe you're grooming future coaches this way too.
Yeah, well, there's been that idea tossed around that they can do more than just be the e-bug, right? They can, you know, groom them to be other things within the organization or some things like that, right? So there is that possibility. I can't wait to hear what comes out of it. It's something that's happened a couple times, really, that two guys have got in. I know guys have sat on the bench and backed up, but something that happens not very often can be kind of controversial when we see it does. So, you know, two great stories. So both those guys come in, and one the accountant in Chicago, I forget his name even already.
Scott Foster.
Obviously, Scott Foster. Yeah, his jersey was selling off the shelves as well, I believe, too. And David Ayers, who's now on the, you know, the celebrity tour of his life right now. So two pretty good stories.
We'll ask Aldi tomorrow. I'm sure he'd say goalies would make the best coaches. So, you know, he'll back up that claim of having some video coaches. Okay, let's get to the Canucks here. They're making an East Coast swing. And you know, the hype has been building around this team as the season's gone on. Pedersen and Hughes have started to take some headlines. Now they get to play in Montreal. They play in Toronto on Saturday. Is it time everyone starts taking notice how special these two players are? Did we lose him?
He's speechless.
Speechless. The rest of the East Coast is like, about time they came out East.
Can't deal. Can't deal. Colby Armstrong could not deal with the thought of talking about the youngsters on the Vancouver Canucks. I'll tell you, I asked DJ Smith, and I know you guys will play a part of this on the pregame show today, but I just asked him about Quinn Hughes and his scouting report, and he just kind of exhaled. Anyway, well, I hope he doesn't play that much, and maybe he'll get sick this afternoon, and then he got back to reality. But he's a special player, and we become accustomed to his greatness. It's one of the conversations I want to have about Elias Pettersson here in the near future. Have we already started to take him for granted?
For sure. I do think that's part of the and this is why,
which is the second season in the NHL. It's incredible.
When some people say, like, oh, you keep talking about Pettersson and Hughes, it's like, we have to remind you of how special these players are.
Because they're just scratching the surface of what they might be able to become. Colby Armstrong rejoins us now. We'll give you an opportunity to actually answer the question, Colby.
Yeah, sorry. I accidentally hung up there. That was my fault.
Accidentally, in quotes. I hear you.
Yeah. That's my fault. I was laughing right when I did it. I was like, oh, no.
Quinn Hughes, Elias Pettersson, Bick teed it up for you. Their East Coast tour. Are people back East awakened to how good these players are, or is it only when they get right in front of their faces they know?
No, I think they're awakened, yeah. I mean, these guys are elite young talent. And, you know, when you think of the Canucks, I mean, that's all everyone talks about is those two guys. And I think every city they go to, especially me for Pittsburgh here, we had that one wild and crazy comeback game by Pittsburgh here in Pittsburgh. And then the game before that, I think it was three assist night for Quinn Hughes. And, you know, I think also everyone's kind of waking up around the league to those two and what JT Miller's been able to do as a Canuck this year as well. So, yeah, those two guys are exactly what we've come to expect out of this young talent pool that the NHL is pushing through right now. And you can look around the league at, you know, probably, you know, 10 or 12 really elite guys through all the teams. And those two are two names that you would definitely throw around there for guys that are making an impact and stand out. And guys that I think you pay to, as a fan, you pay to watch. Like, they're exciting, the things that they can do out there what they can create and make happen and what they do for their teams as well. They're not only just really good, but they're massive pieces at such a young age. And, you know, not very much experience at the NHL level, obviously, to make the imprint that they do game to game.
You make a good point. There's guys who are really good, and then there's other guys who are that, and they're a draw. And Pettersson and Hughes are both draws. I don't think JT Miller fits that category of being a draw, but man, has he been good this year. Is there anyone you can think of that you played with or against, Colby, that you knew was a good player, but then all of a sudden, a few years into his career, he took off and actually surprised you at what he was capable of? Because Miller's in that conversation for a lot of people right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he is. And I think we're, you know, really seeing him explode and excel with the Canucks, one with the way he plays, but who he gets to play with. And we have kind of seen just his foot completely pressed on the gas pedal all year. He's been roaring this year. And, you know, I can think of one guy really that, you know, I played with that carved himself out a pretty nice little career until he did suffer a cardiac situation and had to shut it down, and Rich Peverly. And he kind of came out of nowhere and in Atlanta playing with him, and he was just, I mean, his skating, his hands, his shot, you know, his ability up the middle to create and make things happen with his speed, and then to see how valuable he was in going to Boston and winning, being a big part of their, you know, winning cup, and what he's able to do there and the way he's able to produce. And, you know, he's ended up being a pretty darn good player out of nowhere that I don't think a lot of guys realize. It was great playing with him. I actually got to play on a line with him as well. But, you know, that's one guy out of many guys that have, you know, thrown some great years together. And I think situation and fit means a lot. That's why over the trade deadline, you see some moves and you're like, okay. And then you see some moves and you're like, oh, this is going to work out great. Like Toffoli, for example. You need a guy like that there. You got an injury in Besser and situation. You get a veteran guy that can come in and be that goal scorer. And we've seen him be able to have some success right now with the Canucks as well.
There's also an injury situation creeping up here in Vancouver with Jacob Markstrom going down. Career, like, okay, so Thatcher Demko has to rise up now. But in your career, ever a situation where, you know, there's some stakes and a goalie goes down? What's the conversation like in the room for the skaters to how to rally for the backup?
Yeah, well, you have to. And I think guys are used to that, right? Like, it's hockey. Through their careers, they've always had a situation where something's happened. And I think there's obviously more eyes on it. And just because it's obviously Jacob Markstrom, the year that he's had, the backbone he's been for that team, the MVP season that he's had, you know, people are talking about him and Vezina. You know, I've thrown out a heart-worthy season, just how solid he's been for the Canucks this year. And so that's where it catches a lot more eyes. Like, I remember, I think Sid dropped out with a ankle sprain at one point in the season when I was in Pittsburgh, and we were kind of like, how do you replace a guy like that, right? Like, how do you place such a influential player on your team that's the guy that is kind of your backbone of your team? And you know, you get by. You had a guy like Malkin step up and play out of his mind when that happened, and you know, you're gonna have to see Demko, like you said, kind of fill in and be that guy. Look, they've won a few games in a row now. They're feeling all right. They've got some moves made, and this is their team the rest of the way. So you kind of, as a team, you learn next man up, and you learn to just buckle down, and it's kind of like, okay, you just kind of move by it. And as big of a loss as it is for the Canucks, I'm sure the team will just move by and have to, you know, pay attention to the details of the game and details of their play a lot more in the loss of Markstrom.
You mentioned the Hart Trophy. Is it Dreisaitl's right now? Is he your front runner?
Yeah, he's got to be. He's got to be, right? The season he's putting together, all the talk of him and McDavid there, and then they go out in the trade deadline and just get better and as they march towards hopefully getting their shot at some playoff action as well. But it's just so close right now, isn't it? It just, everything's on the line right now, which amplifies, I think, that Markstrom injury. But it has to be Leon Draisaitl with the season he's having.
Really quickly here, because okay, you mentioned Markstrom and the Hart Trophy conversation, right? And that,
yeah,
like that's a trophy converting conversation, right? He would be up for the Vezina. He crosses over to Hart. We had this conversation in this city, and the fans love it, about Cale Makar versus Quinn Hughes for Calder. Just how far away are those two guys crossing over to the Norris conversation? Because I feel like it's Carlson and Josi, they're the one and two, but who's going to finish third in that conversation? And where do those two rookie defensemen enter the conversation for the Norris?
Yeah, well, I don't think they're far off. Like, I think you'll probably see them get some votes, I'd imagine, with the years that they're having. Like, it's just so big, the impact they have on their team. And I think everyone thought Quinn Hughes was going to be really good coming in. And we obviously got a taste and a look at what Makar could be when he came up with Colorado the year before in the playoffs after his season was done in college. And we're like my mouth was hanging open seeing him play. I was like, holy smokes, what kind of animal is this guy? Is he like he's from another planet, the way he was playing? And so now we're getting to see Hughes as well. And I think both those guys are really close to being those type of conversation guys every year, just because not only are they rookies this year, but they're leading the charge from the back end. Both those guys are massive impact players and massive go-to guys. And, you know, when you have defensemen that can do that game in and game out, that's where you start to hear that noise. That's where you get the conversation rolling. And, you know, they're doing it and showing up and doing it with their play.
Great stuff, as always. Keep up the great work on television. I hope we don't have to take any money away from you to suit up a backup goalie this week.
Yeah, seriously. Unbelievable story, but thanks. Sorry I hung up on you guys. I had a little finger happy right there. It was touching my phone.
Won't be the last time.
All right.
Thanks, Colby.
I'll talk to you soon, hopefully, but enjoy the little push at the end here. From your Canucks.
Should be fun. That is Colby Armstrong. We love him. Always has a good time.
So
that was a great story about the ECHL and e-bug situation they had there. Quickly, you talked about the Norris conversation. I saw a list published today. It's only one list from one publication. Quinn Hughes, Cale Makar, neither was in the top five. Now, the top five that this publication put out, top three are pretty obvious. John Carlson, Roman Josi, Victor Hedman were top three. After that, Pietrangelo four. Shea Theodore for this publication came in at five. So they were looking a lot more about good offensive stats, but also what you're doing at the defensive end of the ice as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about this a lot more, and this isn't, hey, Quinn Hughes has to be a finalist for the Norris. That's not this conversation. We've talked about this a lot. This trophy, more than any other in this league, is a reputation trophy.
Right or wrong?
That's the reality. You know
scenario.
What, man? This guy hasn't gotten his due for a while. He's got to be in the race this year. We've seen it time and time again. Right or wrong, that's quite often how it goes.
But I just want to just give an idea of how special this season is. Like, there's Colby saying that they're not that far off.
No, I agree.
And I kind of disagree with that in that publication. Like, number five, Shea Theodore, that seems a bit lofty to me. Who's had the bigger impact on their team, Quinn Hughes or Shea Theodore? I think universally you would say...
Yeah, but that's not the award necessarily. The award is best defenseman. Which, again, we can get into the connotation of that and whether that means most important defenseman to your team or best defenseman in the league. We'll save that conversation perhaps for tomorrow. You're co-hosting. You're basically in this chair for the next 8 hours?
I'll be here for a while. Reach Deep, myself and Randeep Janda coming up, and then Sat and I got the intermissions heading into the game, and Randeep and I will have the pregame show coming up at 3.
Sounds great. Reach Deep is next. Randeep Janda will slide in. Sat Shaw after that. Canucks, they play here occasionally, but this is the home of Bick Nazar, Sportsnet 650.
We're digging in the corners to bring you the most insider info about your hometown team. We're your voice of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.